It's Friday night on the Fan pregame. Blue Jays back in action after off day yesterday, hosting the Colorado Rockies this weekend. A very winnable series at the Rogers Center. Chris LaRue is going to join us from the broadcast booth in about 5 minutes to set it all up for us.
We are precisely 24 hours away from the start of UFC 300. And you know what that means. Aaron Bronstetter from Vegas will talk new gloves, big bonuses, and bets with Bronny.
New gloves. I'm sold. We're going to take a bunch of looks at some of your best bets for UFC 300 and Bronny's as well. The Masters leaderboard, of course, here in day two, and then tonight's games across the network. But if we're talking Masters, something spectacular continues to happen around Tiger Woods and the Masters, and he just set a all-time record for 24 straight cuts hit at the Masters, plus one, I believe, over round one was the final score that he had here. One over?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so he has now done something, and even in his age and his time of being at the top of the game, he's still breaking records. So Tiger setting a record for 24 straight cuts.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, he did get a bit of a favorable start time because the guys who are out there now are getting basically blown over by the gusts of wind, although Scottie Scheffler's still out there and it's not really bothering him. But Tiger Woods, maybe a little bit of a benefit given where he started this tournament. But you look at the names that are struggling out there. Victor Hovland's 7 over through 11 holes today. Dustin Johnson's 13 over. Sam Burns, 9 over. Jordan Spieth, 9 over. These guys may have not got the same draw, but, you know, this course right now in the conditions are eating up some of the best golfers in the world, and ho-hum, Tiger Woods goes out there and just calmly makes the cut, sitting T23 with an even par round and 1 over for the tournament today. It's remarkable that he continues to do this here, and I guess the question is because there was a lot less attention, I thought, around Tiger this time, even with, you know, the chance to, you know, set more records at Augusta. But if this is all he is now, which is a guy who can make the cut once a year at the most important tournament, like, are we okay with that? And the Masters is different in that it kind of embraces history, right? Like, Fred Couples is out there limping around and no one bats an eye. Like, it's okay because that's what the Masters is all about. So it's kind of set up perfectly for Tiger, who gets to continue to come back, who knows this course so well, to just come back and treat fans to a Tiger round. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, well, every single time, a made cut.
I think it's interesting, like, the way that Tiger talks about what this meant to him and what maybe we think it might mean for Tiger. I thought when I watched his press conference on Wednesday, that the questions being asked of Tiger, the tone of the media and the tone of people asking him was my, like, how do you feel? Like, are you going to be able to make it through the first day? You know, what does playing at Augusta mean to you? And it was almost like writing the end of Tiger's story. And when Tiger talks about what this means to him, and he was just asked after he made the cut streak, he goes, well, this isn't just about me breaking this streak. It means I have a chance to win the Masters. It means I'm going into the weekend here. I have a chance to win this tournament. I'm only 8 back. I don't think anyone is going to run off with it. And that's Tiger's MO. That's the way he views this tournament. I don't think he's showing up to anything to be a participant or to be a guy that is, you know, the mascot of the Masters. I really do think that Tiger joins these things because he knows, A, he can still hang, and we just saw it, 24 straight time making the cut. But he's right. Like, it isn't a runaway at this point. A lot of guys have dealt with some really bad weather, and that's kept Tiger within reach. And Tiger within reach over the next 3 days is going to be awesome. And of course, the health and how his body's holding up is going to be very interesting. He's only played 36 competitive holes this year. He's got his fused ankle, a fused back. He had to rebuild his swing basically to all upper body, but somehow he prevails. And so I think that's what I view Tiger as, is maybe we were too quick to just be like, hey, how does it feel to be here? What does this place mean to you? Because he views it as, well, I'm here to win. And that's what is so special about Tiger. I'm hoping that he's within reach or playing meaningful golf on Sunday.
Yeah, if Tiger Woods didn't still have that burning desire to at least want to feel what it feels like to be in contention, to feel Sunday at the Masters, then it would just be maybe the platform to sell Sunday red golf gear, right? Like, he's going to go every year.
It is looking nice, the Sunday red.
Yeah, show off the best stuff. And I'm sure people are buying it at an exponential rate right now. But it's not just about that. It's not about, it's actually not about anything but Tiger Woods, I think. It's about him doing what he wants to do, what makes him feel like Tiger Woods. And I don't think anything makes Tiger Woods feel like Tiger Woods more than playing on the weekend at Augusta.
Playing and being competitive.
And he's earned himself that opportunity again.
And I wonder if, you know, this is his 24th straight one. And of course, that's the record. I don't think he does that stuff to set the record and then think this is my last go. I wonder when Tiger knows. I think he makes the decision. He doesn't want the worst golf to be like the way that it edges him out. Do you know what I mean? I don't think he wants to show up and be like 10 over on a Thursday and like just kind of a...
It depends when.
A tough look.
Because it's okay, like it is okay with Fred Couples, Mark Weir, like down the line, guys who don't belong on that competitive field.
They're kind of
field,
mascots for it. That's
but
it.
They are, yeah, they come
He's
back because
yet.
That's part of the Masters tradition is seeing the older Masters players and they decide when they're done. But Tiger Woods, like if it's abrupt, maybe he's not like that. But if it's, hey, I got another 10 more years of playing well, and then it's okay because I'm old and gray to be shooting 12 over. Although there are players that are not even in
young
that
and spry.
Yeah, that are you know committing that sort of score this weekend. But yeah, it depends on what it feels like when it drops off, and it just hasn't dropped off yet at the Masters. He still knows how to play there as good as pretty much anyone out there.
Yeah, it's going to be a great weekend ahead. 1996 was the last time that Tiger Woods missed a cut at Augusta, and we were looking back at what had not happened in 1996, and there was no broadband internet or like Google was just being created, so that's just some perspective for you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we'll shift over to Blue Jays. As we mentioned, they're taking on the Rockies this weekend, 7 o'clock, first pitch on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And you're going to hear our next guest, Chris LaRue, our Jays radio analyst, joining us. Chris, how's it going?
Hey, I've actually enjoyed the Masters the last couple of days. I've just been sitting on my couch. I watched all day yesterday. I want to say all day today, but I probably watched about 2 hours today. I love that you have to transition from talking about Tiger Woods and Corey Connors in the Masters to talking about the Colorado Rockies.
Well, I mean, yeah, there are some guys out on tour that are playing like the Rockies, an absolute bad beat. And I wonder what it's like as a player. You're coming into a homestand if you're a Blue Jay, and you're facing against a team like the Rockies, who have actually never won at the Rogers Center in their history of being a team. It's very much a sweepable, winnable series for the Blue Jays. Like, how do you balance that? You know, we call it in hockey like a cookie night, like a points night, where you're like, I'm going to go get a couple goals and a couple assists. But you want to be patient at the plate. You still want to play your game. But you know your opponent is really not the biggest, scariest Yankees that we had just seen.
Well, I think that baseball is a lot different than basketball or hockey or football, where if you're a bad team in football, you're probably always a bad team, right? Mm-hmm. Same with basketball. I guess same with hockey, maybe. But baseball is different because if you have a good pitcher on the mound, you always have a chance to win no matter what. You can win 1-0. Your offense might be terrible, but if you have a very good pitcher, like if the Rockies somehow had Justin Verlander on the mound tonight, they would have a chance to win, right? And they have a good pitcher on the mound tonight. They have Ryan Feltner. Mm-hmm. He has a 3.27 ERA, and he has 14 Ks in 11 innings. So it's not like they're throwing out their guys with 16 ERAs or 10 ERAs. They actually have a decent pitcher on the mound tonight, which kind of scares me just a little bit, but whatever.
No, that's the danger, right? Like, there can be some treachery when a bad team comes through because there's an expectation. And right, if you run into a hot pitcher, and you could blame the bats, or you could just acknowledge that, hey, their starting pitcher, despite being on a bad team, was really, really good today. But you're right. It's not like hockey or football where you can't just show up and be better. You have to actually prove it on the field. And if you force it from at least an offensive perspective, you can get into trouble. In that sense. But I do wonder for you, like, because this is a bad team, but there are good teams that the Blue Jays have faced. When do you show what type of team you are? Is it against a bad team where you just take care of business? Or is it, you know, playing up to competition maybe against a good team and, you know, earning a split? Like, where do you see the value of a team? Is it against bad teams, good teams? Does it really matter? Because I tend to think, yeah, teams that are really good, they just go out there and beat the Rockies 3 times.
I do agree with you that good teams would just generally go out and beat a bad team. But like I said, sometimes there's a good pitcher on the mound and and you run up against a guy that is just absolutely nasty for some reason. Like for instance, Kyle Freeland, who has a 6.16 ERA for the Rockies right now. If he came out tonight, there's a possibility that he could just throw seven shutty. We don't know, right? Baseball is so weird. I mean, I guess in football and in hockey, you can just say, let's just roll over these guys. Let's just absolutely dominate these guys for three periods or four quarters or whatever it is. You can't really do that because baseball is such an individual sport. So if the Blue Jays somehow get swept this weekend, let's say worst case scenario, they get swept, am I automatically going to think that the Blue Jays are a bad team? There's no chance, because I think the Blue Jays are a playoff team. But should they win this series? Yes. I know I'm not saying anything important and next level right now, but that's just how baseball is. Like, any single team can win on any given day, and that's the beautiful thing about baseball. That's why I love it so much. It doesn't matter whether you're Nolan Ryan. You can go up against a Chris LaRue, and I could dominate Nolan mm-hmm. Ryan for some reason, because I slept better, or I ate better, or I prepared better. It's crazy. Baseball's so weird, and I know that you guys are hockey people or even football people, but that's the beautiful mm-hmm. thing about baseball, and that's why I love it so much.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about perspectives, right, you mentioned Freeland. I mean, Rockies fans, they might not be thinking this, but they could be thinking, hey, this is the get-right spot here against this Blue Jays offense for mm-hmm. Freeland in this series, and they could be looking at it as a possibility to sort of get their pitching sorted. So it is all about perspective, and it's always dangerous, at least I think, for a bad team, or when a bad team comes in, because they have that potential to throw a little gas on the fire. It's an important one, though, for Kevin Gausman tonight. Did not have a great outing last time out, and of course there was problems at training camp, or at spring training rather, and his ramp-up process was not perfect. What are you looking for from him tonight to see that he's getting back to form?
I mean, first of all, I'm looking for velocity. I think his first pitch in his last start against the Yankees, that was, I believe, 6 days ago or 5 days ago, was 88 miles an hour, and Ben and I kind of looked at each other, and we were like, was that a fastball? Was that a split finger? What was that, a slider? What was that? And then his next pitch was 86.7 or something like that, and we were just like, there's no way these are fastballs, right? Like, these have to be split fingers. And it turns out they were fastballs. And I think that I've talked to everybody that can make decisions. I've talked to the training staff, I've talked to coaches, and they all say that he's completely healthy. The only thing that was going on was it was cold. And I hate saying this, because I don't know, right? Like, I don't know how Kevin Gausman feels. I don't know how healthy he is. I don't know anything, but I have never seen in my 20 years of professional baseball, I've never seen a pitcher drop 8 miles an hour just because it's cold.
What would it be? What would it be like? The grip, just your hand is numb. The grip is more difficult because it's like cold. Like, you know, you would know.
I think it's just like your body's tight. Your muscles are a little tight just because it's cold out. You can't get loose. I don't think it has anything to do with the grip. I think it just has to do with your overall body and how you feel. Like if you jumped in a cold plunge and you decided to play hockey, you'd probably feel terrible.
It'd be sluggish,
right? Exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of I would imagine the same way. I mean, I've pitched in the cold before, and if I was normally 95, I'd probably be 92, 93. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a huge jump like that. Like, he's literally normally 95, and he was throwing fastballs at 87, 88 miles an hour. And it was just strange to me. And I know that he's not hurt, because if he was hurt, he wouldn't be starting today.
Yeah.
But I really do truly hope that he's back to the Kevin Gausman that was attacking guys in his first start, in his last spring training start, even in his last batter. His last batter, he was 93 to 95 in his last game against the New York Yankees. I was so confused. I know that you guys too, watching that game, you were like, what is happening right now? This guy is throwing 88 miles an hour and he's supposed to be throwing 95 miles an hour. So I really do hope that he comes out, and it's actually pretty pleasant today at the Rogers Center. You know, the sun is out and it's dry. So I hope that he's the Kevin Gausman that we've seen over the last couple of years, because I was not only confused, I was concerned.
I think that maybe part of the Blue Jays fan, just when they saw Kevin Gausman's velocity going down, was, well, we've seen so many injuries with pitchers to start the season. Like, it feels like an abnormal amount of pitchers have been injured or undergoing surgery. So, I mean, obviously that's not currently the case with Kevin Gausman, but I do think it raises some alarms. Like,
we'll be tracking the gun early tonight.
We're seeing pitchers get injured really often.
I will be too.
I wonder for you, just because, like, this is your ballpark, your wheelhouse. Like, what are you thinking about all the recent injuries with pitchers? Is it pitch clock related? Is it just because now, you know, throwing 93 or 4 isn't what is great and outstanding as it used to be? Like, people are hitting 100 and you know, we've heard, I know Blair and Barker were talking to a doctor 2 days ago on their show.
Dr. Andrews did my elbow.
Okay, so yeah, I thought you would. And so he was talking all about the joints, and maybe they're not fully developed, and we're learning so much more. Like, what are your thoughts on just how many injuries we've seen with pitchers so far and where this might be headed?
Yeah, I think obviously it's the training is way more advanced than it used to be. I think back in like the 80s and even like the early 90s, guys would come into spring training and they would use spring training to get ready for the season. Now guys are using December, January, February to get ready for spring training. So you're not resting during those periods, right? And I'm just talking strictly about professional baseball right now, but you're not resting during those periods that you're supposed to be resting for, because you need to come to spring training completely ready to throw 96 miles an hour, 98 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour. That's not the way it used to be. Even when I played, my first big league camp in 2009, which isn't really that long ago, guys were still kind of, you know, starting their throwing programs in January, maybe like early January. But now it's completely different. Guys aren't even really stopping throwing anymore. The season ends in September, or the end of September, let's say, for a non-playoff team. They maybe take a couple of weeks off in October, and then they're right back up to throwing. Because that's what you have to do to stay ahead of everybody else, because everybody is doing that. Everybody is so good now. Everybody is throwing 98 miles an hour that you have to do that. I don't want to fall behind. Like, if a doctor came to me and said, hey, if you don't stop throwing for 2 months out of the year or 3 months out of the year, you'll probably get hurt or you could get hurt, I'm willing to take that chance. I want to make money. I want to be good in the big leagues. I want to dominate. I want to throw 100. You can't tell me that I need to take 3 months off and potentially not be where everybody else is that's throwing 11 and a half months out of the year, right? I mean, that just sounds crazy to me. And I think that Barker was talking about this the other day, and sometimes I agree with Barker, sometimes I don't. But I agreed with him on this one, is that as a kid, you see all these people or other kids doing the training, the extra training. Same in hockey, same in other sports. You see all these kids doing all of that and doing these throwing programs and things that will potentially help you throw 95 or get to the big leagues or get to college or wherever. Mm-hmm. If somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, let's not work so hard, you know. Let's not train as hard as these other guys that are training." If somebody said that to me as a parent, I would say, no, like, I want my kid to play in the big leagues. I want my kid to go to college. I want my kid to have a chance.
It would sound counterintuitive.
So yeah, exactly. It makes no sense. I'm willing as a parent, and I don't have any kids, but when I do have kids, like, I feel like I'm going to give them every opportunity to succeed. And whether that's, you know, being an accountant or being a Major League Baseball player, I'm going to give them every opportunity to succeed. And I know you guys feel the same way. If someone said, hey, in 12 years, you might have Tommy John prematurely because you worked really hard this offseason, I'm going to say, okay, cool. I'm willing to take that chance. And I think that Barker hit the nail on the head with that one when he said, you know, if that's what it takes, that's what I'm going to do. And that's what I'm going to have my kid signed up for. I'm going to work my butt off. He's going to work his butt off. And if I make it to the big leagues and have Tommy John, so what? at least I made it.
Mm-hmm. And you got the in with Andrew, so that might help at a future time and place. We're talking with Chris LaRue, who'll be on the call with Ben Shulman tonight. Rockies in town. The Rockies series could stage the return of both Jordan Romano and Danny Jansen. In terms of impact, which one's going to impact this team more, the return of Romano or Jansen?
Well, I think we saw the other night the other afternoon on Wednesday that the Blue Jays bullpen is pretty thin right now without Swanson and without Romano. So I tend to lean towards that being the most important, because having Jordan, having Jimmy, having Chad Green and those guys at the end, and Swanson at the end of a ball game, that just changes a ball game. But Alejandro Kirk has caught 11 of 13 games. And I know, Justin, I was on your show early in the season, and I said that Alejandro is one of my favorite catchers in the league. He's top six or seven. I forget exactly what I said. But that's if he's getting proper rest.
Right?
Like, to me, he looks tired. 11 out of 13 games, mm-hmm. especially for a guy like Alejandro Kirk, is insane. Danny Jansen couldn't be coming back at a more important time for them to kind of split time, for them to take a breather. He started on Wednesday, and I was just like, what is happening? He needs a breather. And I know that there was a ton of people that probably thought the same thing. This is a perfect chance to have him either DH or just kind of hang back on the bench. So for Danny Jansen to be coming back right now, I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, between those two and then the newest, elevation of Yariel Rodriguez coming possibly this weekend sometime. It looks like injury help is on the way for the Blue Jays. Chris, have a great call tonight. We appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. And long season ahead, so we'll definitely be bugging you soon. And get some Masters watching in there, too.
Can't wait.
Thanks, buddy. Chris LaRue, Jays radio analyst with us here, of course, at Sportsnet.
So if pitchers only take 2 weeks off, and I know millionaire athletes,
it's pretty crazy.
They're going on vacations. Do they like find somewhere to throw when they're in the south of France? Like, how does it work?
They do. They just, all you need is a ball.
I guess so. And someone to catch 100 miles an hour.
You just throw it at like a palm tree.
Hey kid, you got a moment?
Throw it into the ocean.
Whip balls at you.
Oh, that's good stuff. I have a quick thought, but I want to save it. I want to tease it for second part of our show.
Sure.
The Blue Jays hung a new banner. And I don't think it's going over well. So we will talk about that in the second half of the show. But they did, in all of their renovations, they snuck a new banner up.
It's never good when you're sneaking a banner.
They snuck a banner, folks.
Because banners are celebratory.
Yes, and I don't know if this is something to celebrate, but we'll talk about that in the second half of the show. We'll get in our quick best bets for tonight. Mine's coming from that Blue Jays game. I didn't want to, crush the Rockies too much, but they've never won at the Rogers Center. They're not a very great baseball team. I think the Blue Jays are going to have a big offensive weekend. So I'm going to have them on the run line tonight, -110. They're pretty heavy favorites just on the money line, but I'm feeling like the offense is coming around. So I like the Jays on the run line.
So we haven't talked about it pretty much at all on this show, but the Arizona Coyotes are in deep trouble, right? Arizona Coyotes might be in the Salt Lake as soon as last season. We did talk about it with Frank at times over the course of this year, but things are happening, right? And Bill Armstrong, the GM, is apparently going to Edmonton to talk with the players face to face. All I'm trying to get at is distractions for the Arizona Coyotes at current moment. They are in Edmonton tonight. Edmonton is an absolute juggernaut. Edmonton against a distracted, bad hockey team that's worried about where they're going to live next year. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be pretty easy pickings for the Edmonton Oilers tonight, even with some injury troubles for them. So I got the Oilers on the puck line, -110 against an Arizona Coyotes team that is trying to figure out what the housing situation is like in Salt Lake.
Yeah, and they are coming off a big overtime win against the Canucks, but that can only happen so many times. All right, so those are our best bets for tonight. We'll get into some UFC 300 bets on the other side of the break. We will take a quick break because up on Sportsnet, if you want to stay with them, it is Blue Jays Central, of course, Rockies, and Blue Jays tonight. If you want to stay with us on Sportsnet 360, we're going to have Aaron Bronstetter join us from UFC 300, and that's also up on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So the Fan pregame will continue. We'll do some UFC 300 Las Vegas thoughts, best bets for that. We'll wrap up with a little Masters talk, and guess who came back to play just in time for LTIR relief?
Another tease. Well, Mark Stone, a tradition like no other.
He's back. Celebrating a lot of traditions this weekend. Yeah. Mark Stone is one of them. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back on the Fan pregame.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the Fan pregame, Sportsnet 360. It's Sportsnet 590, the Fan. We are ahead of UFC 300 in Las Vegas, which is going to be, I think, probably the best place to see a UFC event. Number 300, it's a big one, star-studded. I cannot. We should have a like a bingo card of celebrities, and I'm sure you could hit bingo real quick at one of these.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be a heavily attended, at least from the celebrity standpoint. Event. I wonder, though, it is interesting because celebrities, like, we were no bragging here, but cage side for UFC 297, and we saw a couple celebrities bouncing around, but they're coming in with like four fights left, three fights left.
We were there from the beginning.
And we were there from the beginning, but also this fight card begins with like exclusively bangers, like legendary names, former title holders. Each one, or there's one former title holder in the first bout of the night facing off against each other. Like, you can't miss anything, and I don't know if the celebs will be there for 13 straight fights, but maybe some of them will prove me wrong.
All right, let's bring in Aaron Bronstetter, of course, our MMA analyst at Sportsnet. Bronny, viva Las Vegas. How's it going?
I'm doing great. And you're right. If you're not there for the first fight tomorrow night, you're just there because you want to be at an event. You're not a real fight fan. So I'm with you on that.
Okay. That's interesting because I remember we were talking before 300 was announced and there was all the speculation as who's going to be the big headliner. What are the big names? But maybe like the whole, I guess, picture of this is it's not about one or two headliners. It's about the depth of this card. And from start to finish, you're going to be entertained. It doesn't matter if it's the biggest name or not. These are winners. These are people fighting for an opportunity to be a winner and Olympic champ. So when you look at this card, is it depth that stands out to you?
Yeah, 100%. If you put this main event, Alex Pereira taking on Jamal Hill on another pay-per-view, in fact, it was supposed to be on next month's UFC 301 pay-per-view as the headliner. It's a good headliner, but it's not the marquee headliner that you can compare to a UFC 100 or UFC 200. But this card is not built on that one fight. It's built on the sum of its parts. If you look at it, you've got 11% of the champions in UFC history on a single card. If you look at how many top 10 fighters across all of these divisions are on this card, it's really an incredible amount of talent, a total dearth of talent. And, you know, it would be a little bit tougher to convince somebody that, you know, if they're on the fence about watching this, they might not be as emotionally invested because there's no George St. Pierre, no Brock Lesnar, no Ronda Rousey, that kind of name value. But you can guarantee whoever is asking if they should watch this card, should I watch this card, you will guarantee them an entertaining night because there's just so much talent and such high-level fights from the very start of the card all the way up to the main event.
So depth is the distinguishing factor, but give us another way in which this fight card will be different Saturday night.
Yeah, this is like that championship Raptors team. It's all about the depth. But the reason it's going to be different is because, like you mentioned, from that very first fight, you've got Davis and Figueiredo taking on Cody Garbrandt. Like, Figueiredo was a champion last year. Cody Garbrandt is one of the youngest champions in bantamweight history. You look at the way that this card's structured, you're going to be getting all of these former or possibly future champions, present champions, in almost every single fight. It's really the thing, I think, that sets it apart from other cards. And if you ask anybody who's a fan of the fight game, you know, my colleague R.J. Clifford said something this week that really resonated with me. This is almost like a love letter to the fight fan. They're not necessarily trying to appeal to that many people outside of the bubble, but if you watch this fight card, I honestly think that you're going to end up being thoroughly entertained the whole way through.
And the secret to attracting this depth, I guess, might be the bonus structure. $300,000 if you win a bonus at UFC 300. That's an awesome little tidbit. And these guys and girls are going to be fired up to try to impress the bosses and win that $300,000 as a bonus. Another development there in Vegas is the UFC unveiling, maybe not for UFC 300, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, new gloves. Why did they need new gloves in the UFC, and how are these new gloves going to function differently?
Well, they were saying that they hadn't changed the gloves in a long time, and a lot of people have complained about the gloves, especially with eye pokes, determining a lot of fights in recent weeks and really over the years. And they've decided to put together a new glove with new technology. During the Dana White Contender Series this last season, they didn't really tell anybody. They had it as a pilot project for this season. And when they compared eye pokes from seasons 1 through 6 compared to season 7, they've noticed a noticeable difference when it came to how many eye pokes were happening. It was a lot less. So this was certainly a great development for the UFC to have these new gloves. It's something that people have wanted for a long time.
All right, let's start from the main card and work our way down. Big-time event here, Pereira and Hill. We talked to Mike Malott yesterday also, who's doing a wonderful job if you get to see him. But we asked mainly, like, what's going to be the deciding factor between this one? And I wonder for you the same thing. What's going to make this fight as special as it is to be the main event?
Well, this is just a striker's delight. You've got a guy in Alex Pereira who has done things in the combat space that I don't know if we're ever going to see anybody do again. He was a two-division champion in Glory Kickboxing, then makes the move over to mixed martial arts, and within 3 years, in his 30s, wins two divisional championships in the UFC. I mean, it's a mind-blowing thing that he's been able to do. And then you look at Jamal Hill. His striking is so crisp. His footwork is amazing. He's great at playing the foot game. I think that you're almost guaranteed a knockout in this main event because these guys are just such prolific strikers. Now, what's the difference maker going to be? Personally, I think it's going to be how recovered Jamal Hill is from his torn ACL, which he suffered last summer. Coming back, diving right into the fire, into the championship mix. He never lost the championship belt, but a lot of people thought maybe he should have something of a tune-up fight first. He wasn't about that life. He wanted to fight for the championship right away. So it really depends on what his recovery is like and kind of fast-tracking his return, which he thought was going to be next month.
Aaron Bronstetter, live from UFC 300, on with us. Perhaps Hill or Pereira can reach legendary status, but in terms of title fights, I think the closest one to achieving that is Weili Zhang, who's going to be defending her title in the co-main event. What are the implications for her if she wins? Is she, you know, on the way to cementing herself as one of the greatest fighters in UFC history, or is there going to have to be a couple more title defenses for her to get there?
Well, I think to get into kind of that rarefied air of the top three probably needs a couple more title defenses. You know, she held the belt and then dropped it and then won it back, which is already a pretty great achievement. You don't see a lot of fighters do that, but she's just so well-rounded, high fight IQ. And the funny thing is she's the first and only Chinese champion in UFC history. And now her opponent, Yan Xiaonan, has a chance to become the second Chinese fighter in UFC history by defeating the first and only Chinese champion in UFC history. So I think that is what makes this such an interesting story. But yeah, I mean, if she gets a win here, Zhang Weili, and I think if she can beat a challenger like a Tatiana Suarez, who a lot of people have kind of anointed for years as being a future champion, that's when she starts to kind of enter that rarefied air of being like a top three women's mixed martial artist of all time.
The women's fighter, though, getting most of the attention is Kayla Harrison, that's coming over, making her UFC debut. She said before 135 was not a weight she was going to make. She looked like it was a challenge to get to 135, but she did, in fact, get there. The implications of her making weight, does this change the way 135 in the women's division looks like, that she can make this weight given how much pedigree she has and how much buzz there is with her coming over to the UFC?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a game changer for her to be able to make this weight and to try to win the championship at 135 pounds. And Kayla Harrison has that Olympic mentality. Like, anybody who doubts Kayla Harrison is just absolutely doubting the wrong person. I'm not just saying that because she's standing to my immediate left, but I'm saying that because I've watched Kayla Harrison compete, and she is just an absolute phenom. Incredible judo. You know, judo isn't the sport where the Americans have historically done very well at on an Olympic level. She wins 2 gold medals, moves over to MMA. She was doing judo at 170 pounds, goes to MMA at 155 pounds, a cup of coffee here and there at 145, now moving down to 135. I'm really eager to see what she's able to do tomorrow night.
Another question we asked Mike Malott was the dynamic between Justin Gaethje and Max Holloway in the title fight that's not a real title fight, but is a title fight nonetheless, the BMF belt on the line between those two. Holloway moving up in order to fight Gaethje for that title. Holloway has moved up before. The weight difference seemed to play out against him. Like, he just didn't seem like he had the power to hang with Dustin Poirier. Is that going to change against Gaethje?
Well, I will correct you. It is a title fight. It's not a championship fight. It's a title fight.
All right.
The winner earns the title of BMF. So I'm going to correct you on that one. But I just think that this fight is an absolute dream fight for the fight fan. You know, it's not one that makes a ton of sense from a merit standpoint. You got Max Holloway, who's one of the top contenders in the featherweight division. Justin Gaethje, who's one of the top contenders in the lightweight division. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense for them to face off because they're both in championship contention in their respective weight classes. But if you were to say who are two of the most consistently exciting fighters on the roster for the last 10 years, both of those two names are in the mix. And the fact that we're able to get this fight tomorrow, I think, is just a total delight for the fight fans.
We're talking to Aaron Bronstetter at UFC 300 in Las Vegas. What is like the fan choice this weekend? Who is the most popular fighter, or who's the most sentimental choice for fans that are coming to watch UFC 300? As you mentioned, lots of different voices and different perspectives. But is there, you know, a team favorite that you see a lot of people here for?
Well, if you want to talk sentimentality, I think the sentimental story for tomorrow night is Jim Miller. I mean, UFC 100, he competes at UFC 200, and now UFC 300. And he doesn't seem to have any sort of sense of slowing down. I spoke to him a couple months ago, and I said, is there a chance that you lay down the gloves at UFC 300? He said, absolutely not. He says he's having too much fun. And, you know, the crazy thing about it is he gets on the scale today, 44th time that he stepped on the scale. He's never missed weight. He's only once pulled out of a fight because of COVID protocols. It wasn't even his choice. It was because of the protocols at the time. Just a consummate professional. And I think that, you know, that's really the sentimental story, is Jim Miller fighting once again on one of these marquee events.
Last one for you before we start talking bets, Aaron. What's your favorite fight on the card?
My favorite fight on the card? I mean, listen, if you have to ask me, you can only watch one card tomorrow. It has to be Gaethje versus Holloway. I mean, I love watching these two guys compete. And I think that when you see what these guys have brought to the table over the years, I honestly think it's kind of an easy answer. It's just, from an entertainment standpoint, there are very few fights as entertaining as that you could put on.
All right, best bets. We have our notebooks ready and our apps open. So, you know, whatever you're feeling most comfortable with, we'll get it from the guy himself, Aaron Bronstetter. Best bets from UFC 300. What do you got?
I think Jiří Procházka is not the rightful underdog in the fight against Alexander Rakic. I think it's even money now, but he'd been an underdog for a while. I honestly think he should be a bigger favorite in that fight. You know, former champion's been more active than Rakic. That's the way that I would go in that one.
Okay, so I'm going to throw my...
I've got a special guest for you guys.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
We got the second biggest favorite on the card.
Oh,
the biggest favorite behind Bo Nickel.
But I'm your favorite, right?
You're my favorite, okay. Absolutely. Do you have any questions for Kayla Harrison?
Of course we do. Kayla Harrison makes weight,
sure,
comes over
to
UFC. How many fights is it going to require for you, Kayla, to win the belt?
How many fights is it going to require you to win the belt?
I'm going to go ahead and say two. Yeah, that's my goal.
So Holly Holm and who? I'm stealing your questions, but I'm just
going to
ask my
question.
You
got to
take
Holly
over. Are we translating?
Whoever's got the belt.
Oh, so two fights not to get to the belt. It's this fight, and then you're fighting for the championship.
Yeah. No, I'm going to be UFC champion by the end of the year.
You know, Kayla, it's really difficult to talk to two people at once, but I'm doing the best I can here. So we're looking at a fight between Raquel Pennington and Kayla Harrison if she's successful tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm coming for that title. Yeah. One step at a time, brick by brick, you know. Holly is a great opponent. She's tough. She's durable. She's, you know, a proven battle-tested warrior, but it's my time now.
These guys were asking me about best bets. I mean, you're a 5-to-1 favorite, so you can't really get a lot of value out of that. So what round are you going to beat your opponent in?
I like that one, Ronnie. That's a good question.
I did make a bet with Mike Brown that if I get a knockout in the first round, that I get to do, like, a power slap with him at the gym in front of everybody. I get to do one slap, so put your money on first round.
I love it.
I mean,
right,
you
get
to throw them bows. Yeah, Kayla Harrison hasn't gotten the opportunity to throw elbows in a lot of her fights, because in the PFL during the tournament, you're not allowed throwing elbows. So is the elbow, that's going to be a weapon of yours?
That's going to be a huge factor in this fight. I can't wait. It's going to be bloody.
Am I blowing through your clock, guys? Do you guys need to go?
No, we're good.
We're enjoying this.
If you got one more, Aaron,
you get one more, Aaron.
But we'll wrap it up after that.
You got to go to commercial for what? I'm here now.
Well, they want me to ask you, were you better than Ronda Rousey in judo? And would you throw Ronda around like a rag doll? I mean, this is their questions, not mine.
I mean, you know, the record speaks for itself. Ronda was an Olympic bronze medalist and a world silver medalist, and she won a World Cup in Birmingham. I won every single tournament on the world tour, from Masters to World Championships. I'm a world champion. I'm a 2-time Olympic champion. I won every Grand Prix, Grand Slam, World Cup there is to win, most of them twice. So you do the math.
All right, this one's my question. You cut weight to 135 pounds. A lot of people had their doubts. I wasn't one of those people because, I mean, you're a two-time Olympic gold medalist in judo, and people shouldn't doubt you.
Thank you.
What was the hardest moment of the weight cut? If you could take a singular moment where you were like, this is one of the worst feelings of my life, what would it be?
The last pound. Yeah, it's true what they say about the last pound. This morning, it was hard to sleep last night, but to break a sweat again and get that last pound off was the toughest.
Awesome. Well, you're making a cameo here on the fan pregame. Say hi to Ailish and Justin.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Best of
luck.
We're good. Hey,
yeah, best
you.
Of luck. We'll be cheering for you. First round knockout.
And this is a first for me doing two interviews at once. I'm being interviewed. I'm doing interviews.
I'm pushing you to new heights. All right? Yeah. You're welcome. I'm bringing the best out of you.
Yeah, okay.
Your food is great, by the
way. Yeah, I've got the Kayla Harrison Olympic mentality right now doing two things at once.
See? You're striving for greatness. I love it.
Okay. Well,
you can do not only one interview, but you can do two interviews at the same time. What other journalist can do that?
No one.
Well, when Sportsnet hand out gold medals at the annual banquet that we don't actually have, I would be happy to collect it.
Okay, I'll make sure that I present it to you.
Oh, I like
right,
that.
She's Kayla Harrison. I'm Aaron Bronstetter.
Okay, thanks, guys.
This is going on the highlight.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was great. This is going
Aaron,
on the highlight reel when you're accepting awards at the end of the season.
Unbelievable. Thank you.
That was a lot of fun. We have one more for you because you just had a great interview live. You talked to pretty much every single fighter that's fighting this weekend. Who was your favorite interview, aside from Kayla Harrison, who might still be standing right beside you?
Yuri Prokhashka was awesome. I watched an interview with him on the airplane that he had done where someone asked him a question. I thought that the frame had frozen on my laptop, that like there was an issue with the video. He was actually just sitting and thinking. Like, he started blinking, and I was like, okay, there's nothing wrong with the video. He's just in deep thought. So I came up with the idea to just ask him questions where he had to use deep thoughts. And I asked him to build the ultimate fighter, and I asked him to pick the fighter of all time with the highest fight IQ. And I put a counter up on it, like a timer. It was like a minute and 10 seconds of thought before he answered, and the answer was himself.
I love it. I understand that Max Holloway might be hanging around. Can you pull him in there, Bronstetter?
No, he's with someone else right now. He's just getting you guys all these.
He's a Toronto favorite, so I thought that would have been a good call. Mm. But I guess we were a little too late on that. I do have one more for you, and we will let you go, I promise.
We're a Bronstetter.
Hanging with Mike Malotte, like, what is that like? Does it get you some sort of street cred that you didn't have before? I know you're a popular guy around those parts, Bronstetter, but Mike Malotte, does he give you an extra little bump in UFC or in UFC land and in Vegas?
All right, well, I was hanging out with Mike yesterday, and people kept coming up to us, and I thought they were coming to say hi to Mike, and there was actually just people coming to compliment me on my shoes. So I felt pretty good about that. But Mike's been awesome. He's a total pro to work with and a lot of fun. Do you guys want me to interview Max Holloway right now on the show?
Yeah.
You guys have time? He's just right here.
We've got about 4 minutes.
We know Toronto loves Max Holloway. Max Holloway loves Toronto. So just ask him about the relationship.
The best is blessed. What's up, man? So I'm doing an interview right now on a show, and I'm interviewing you at the same time. So what's your question for Max Holloway?
Well, we know he has a connection with Toronto. So Toronto, when are we going to see him back in Toronto fighting?
Okay, they're asking you have a connection with Toronto, and they want to know when you're going to be back in Toronto fighting.
Brother, I don't know why I couldn't get in there in January. You know, you got to be mad. Oh, February. You got to be mad at UFC for that one. But hopefully soon, you know. I know our Raps won the other night. It wasn't looking too good, but we need to get back to a game.
Any other questions for Max? Any Raptors questions?
No Raptors questions. We're trying to forget about that, at least until next year. But one last one, then we'll let him go after that. How does it?
Raptors did great things.
How does it finish this weekend with Gaethje?
They're asking how the fight with Gaethje finishes this weekend.
Violence, blood, and hopefully with my hand raised. That's what we're doing.
Justin Gaethje said, I think it was 2 days ago, that he plans on being dead on Sunday. That's something along those lines.
Yeah.
When you hear somebody say that, what goes through your mind?
I hope not. I don't want to be a murderer. But if he's willing to live it in the cage like that, he found a perfect dance partner, because I'm thinking the same way.
Is that your mentality going into fights usually?
No, I want to be alive. I got a son. I got a loving wife. But if I get pushed to the point, there's no turning back.
So Gaethje can say, because he doesn't have kids. He can spew that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what is going through Gaethje's mind. He's a different beast. But we'll get to find out come Saturday night.
There's a new champion at featherweight, and for a time, it kept being Alexander Volkanovski, a guy who you fought three times. That opens the door for you against Ilia Topuria. Are you hoping that that's your next fight?
We'll see what happens. You know, first things first. I got the highlight. And just like his nickname, I don't want to be the highlight. You know, I want to make a blessed highlight. And we get our hand raised, we have options. You know, you know this game. The more options you got, the more better for you. So, you know, first things first is Justin, and we can go from there.
All right, and finally, a message for the Raptors. I mean, fans are hoping that they're losing so they can keep their draft pick because it's better for them down the road. But what's your message for your friend Bobby Webster and the Raptors?
Just keep doing what you do. Keep killing it. Things will turn around, brother. I wouldn't be too worried. Next year, start focusing for next year and do what you can this year.
All right, you guys are looking at the best, and the best is blessed. It is Max Holloway. And, guys, fan pregame. What a show today. Two guests you guys weren't even expecting.
I love it.
Max, that was
fantastic.
And best of luck tomorrow.
Thank you, Bronny.
Bye-bye, 10th Island. Nothing but love for you guys. Thank you, guys.
There you go.
Max Holloway, Aaron Bronstetter. And I think we should be not thanking our lucky stars, but we just had two live fighters, and I don't think a single curse word on live TV. So that's fantastic.
We did great.
Was Bronny, there one?
I was going to warn
Max before we started, in all honesty, not to swear, but we got through it, thankfully.
We did a good job.
Next time you guys have me at an event like this, make sure you talk to Dan and get me booked for these weigh-in shows.
This is perfect, actually.
For you guys.
We might need a headpiece just for the athletes when they come through, but other than that, it was pretty flawless.
But honestly, we should let Aaron go.
Yeah, we got
this. This was crazy. We really appreciate it. Wow, like that was the first time for all of us to have like a 17-way interview. So you killed it. Have a blast this weekend. We're looking forward to everything you put out, and we're laying big money on Kayla Harrison first round for sure.
Thanks, guys. I'll see you guys at the Sportnet banquet. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, you're getting all the gold medals. There's no chance. Like, we shouldn't even show up. But thanks, Aaron. Appreciate it. Holy smokes. Kayla Harrison and Max Holloway live with our guy, our you know what? He's our reporter on scene grabbing everybody for us, Aaron Bronstetter, and that was awesome.
That was fun. That's like a little sampling of the life Aaron Bronstetter leaves.
Just making friends.
Leads, rather. Like, it's unbelievable. You just have to be ready for, I guess, every situation, and he was there with Kayla and Max.
That was great. Shout out to our behind the scenes, everyone, for making that work.
Shout out Dan. I know Dan was involved.
I think there was a lot going on there, and it was pretty smooth. So thanks to behind the scenes of our show.
Before we break, you teased something about the Blue Jays. We should tie that end up.
The Blue Jays. Oh, yes. I've lost track of what this last 20 minutes was about. But okay, so the Blue Jays did hang a new banner. It is for appearing in the wild card round in 2020, 2022, and 2023. So it's a wild card banner that has the three numbers of the years that they appeared, and they did not win. They got swept, and it was horrible fashion. Yet they have raised the banner up there with all of the other important banners, like being World Series champions and retiring jersey numbers.
Winning AL East. Then
there's the wild card appearances. And I don't think it needs to be raised. I think it's a tough look.
Okay, so just fact check me on this one. Was it up there last year or it just came this year?
I believe it's brand new.
You need multiples of three to raise the banner?
Well, I think three looks better than one, but zero would look better than the entire banner.
Three would be better because at least like you're acknowledging each one and it's fine. Like just because you've been in three, all of a sudden you're acknowledging them. I think it's a tough look,
but you know, whatever makes you feel good when you look up at, if you're looking up there and you're in the batter's box and you think maybe you get pissed off when you see those.
If anything, it could be a little bit of a driving force.
It's like,
behind
I don't want to see that crap. I want to have a new one.
Crap.
Well, that crap.
That's fine.
I just listened to two fighters. I'm like, I'm ready to run through a brick wall.
It kind of goes to my point, though. Like,
you know,
every time a banner goes up, there should be people standing around watching it go
and
up.
And crying.
Right? Maybe not tears. Like, I don't know if you're tearing up if you're AL East champions and you flame out in the first round of the playoffs. Maybe you're not tearing up. But in most cases, there should be some sort of sentiment attached to it. And if it's just, oh, there's a new banner up there with three dates on it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it like fits the criteria just for that reason alone.
I don't think it does, but it's up there. So hopefully they can get a new one and then there'll be no space left and they'll take down that one. That's the plan. That was a crazy show.
That was a wild one.
Yeah, I'm ready. I got a big game at 9 p.m.
You ready to see Mark Stone in the playoffs for the Vegas Golden Knights?
I am ready to see Mark Stone in the playoffs. Also, just thought that I should mention Bryson. Obviously, we know Bryson's having a good weekend. He's playing with 3D printed irons that he got approved last week. What do you think of that?
It's a very Bryson thing to happen, isn't it?
3D printed irons. And he shot 7-under yesterday? I don't know where he's at today, but...
Yeah, he's definitely up there at the top of the leaderboard. 6-under.
He's 6-under today.
T1 or at in current total. Moment. I guess Scottie Scheffler falling back just a little bit. Yeah, I don't really understand Bryson.
just period. Like, that can be the sentence. I don't understand 3D printing.
If he wins the Masters.
So these are things that are kind of out of my...
Imagine what his meal would be. That might actually be worth the content.
If he wins the Masters, I might have to consider 3D printed irons, drivers, and
you could use that.
Putters.
You haven't been out yet.
I only need
those.
One putter.
Yeah, you might need to. All right, that was a fun one, folks. You got the Blue Jays and the Rockies up next on Sportsnet, 7 p.m. first pitch. They'll be up on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, as well. You got UFC 300 tomorrow. It's going to be a jam-packed day. Get a chance to watch what you can. There's a million great fights. That's the beauty of tomorrow and the Masters all weekend long. And that's it for the two of us.
It's going to be a fun sports-watching, couching weekend. Can't wait.
We'll see you on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody.